Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Joining us on the line now is Kate Muir. She's a writer, filmmaker, and women's health campaigner. She actually produced two groundbreaking Channel 4 documentaries with Davina McCall on the menopause, which ignited a massive conversation in the UK. Her latest book, How to Have a Magnificent Midlife Crisis, suggests you should forget everything you've been told about midlife. For millennia, women have been led to believe that it's a time of decline. On the contrary, it's a time of transformation and reformation, a turning point when we can move towards a bigger, better, and more magnificent future. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Thank you for having me here to cause lots of trouble on this subject.
Brilliant. I love it. So where did this book and concept come from? You've obviously been looking into this subject for many years.
Well, there's two strands here. One was that I was looking at all those books about men having a midlife crisis and needing really tight raffia bank shorts and, you know, the red convertible, all that stuff. And as my research into the menopause grew, because I had really hard menopause myself, and then I became a campaigner on the subject because I wanted more women to know what was going on, I sort of realised women deserve to have a midlife crisis so much more than men. And, you know, our brain completely rewires in perimenopause. You know, our grey matter changes, our white matter changes when hormones leave our brain around, you know, the 50 mark. And I also thought, well, we're dealing with, you know, we're becoming infertile. People say we're becoming invisible. We're dealing with what they call empty nest syndrome. And I prefer to say, you know, if, you know, your kids are fledging the nest, so should you. You should be going out there and doing something different. So it was thinking about all those things together, and I just realized there were so many issues, both about, you know, mind and body and spirit. And I just thought, yes, I am going to write a book through hormonal glasses and feminist glasses. And I'm also going to have quite a lot of fun talking about midlife.
Yeah.
So that's my plan.
Brilliant. And can you tell us, if you don't mind, a little bit about your personal experience then with the menopause and how that affected you?
Sure. About 10 years ago, I didn't just have a car crash of a menopause. I did the full Thelma and Louise car off the cliff thing.
Oh.
You know, I laugh about it now, but actually it was really hard. And I lost a lot of things in my life. You know, my mum just died of Alzheimer's. I got divorced. I left my job. You know, I left my home, my family. You know, we're all back together in all sorts of ways now. And I've got a new husband. But at the time, it was a complete kind of perfect storm of chaos. Added to that, I started forgetting everything and losing my memory. And I was writing a shopping list one Saturday and I thought, oh, must shave my legs. And I wrote down the word shaver and I thought, there's another word for that thing in the bathroom, but I can't remember its name. And, you know, and then I realized 15 minutes razor, and I was having heart palpitations, and I rang all my friends going, I think I've got Alzheimer's. I think I'm really ill. And they said, oh, don't be stupid. We've all gone and got HRT, hormone replacement therapy, for our menopause privately. Go and see this woman. And, you know, I tried the NHS, and 10 years ago, you know, this was not the story. You couldn't walk into your doctor and be advised about hormones. And I got HRT, never had a heart palpitation again. My memory came back within a week, and I thought, I need to tell every woman I can possibly think of about this. So I made the two documentaries with Davina McCall, who was a fantastic presenter as well, really took up the cause. And so that was a big tipping point for menopause. But then I realized midlife is so much bigger. And I want to talk about, you know, creative awakening. I want to talk about digital detoxing. I want to talk about what alcohol does to your body and midlife muffin top. All these kind of things all came together You know, it's a big handbag of a book with all that stuff in it.
Yeah. You know? And I want to ask you a bit about HRT, because I think particularly before the documentaries with Davina McCall, it was kind of got a lot of bad press, let's say. There are a lot of women that said, oh, no, you shouldn't reach for HRT. There are more natural alternatives and there are better ways of dealing with it that don't give the potential side effects of HRT. And it was deemed that something that maybe should be an absolute last resort as opposed to a first resort. Can you sort of debunk the myths as to why it's not such a bad thing?
Absolutely. I think for the majority of women, it should be first resort. And I have read the science. And almost 23 years ago, actually, that big study came out from America that said HRT can increase your risk of breast cancer. And everyone stopped taking the old HRT pills. But they were synthetic pills. They were made of stuff we really don't use anymore if we can help it. And the new HRT has a much better safety profile. And the NHS says that here in Britain. And basically, you know, you've got less risk of clot with the new HRT. You've got less risk of breast cancer. Everything is safer. And basically, it's like WD-40 in your veins. It's made from soy. It's a molecular copy of your own hormone. So rather than thinking, I'm putting an alien thing in my body, you can think, I'm topping up my hormone, my natural hormone. And, you know, it's a choice of whether you want to do that. And some people do have a slight reaction or, you know, find it, they don't tolerate it that well. But the majority of women do. And in terms of longevity and protecting you from things like osteoporosis and dementia, it keeps your bones strong. Hormones build bones. Most women don't know that. And that's been a big campaign for me, in fact, this year to talk about that. And I've got a whole chapter on that in the book. So it was just learning the science, and women love science, and they will research a skin cream for 2 days, you know, and get the science right. They are also really interested in the science of the hormones that are going to make them feel better and live longer, healthier lives. So it's been a great sort of women up movement rather than the medical establishment down. I mean, fantastic doctors out there, you know, real experts on Instagram like Dr. Louise Newson and things like that. But in you know, this has come from women saying, I would like to advocate for myself. Here's the data. Here's what I feel like. You need to help me. And that has been a real change. And I'm really delighted to see that change.
Yeah. I wanted to pick up on a couple of the things you mentioned that you talk about in the book. Taking advantage of brain rewiring in menopause. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, we're just not taking any shit anymore, are we? I mean, one of the things that's happening is that, you know, our brains do change. And one of the things that happens is our loving mummy estrogen and progesterone hormones disappear, all that lovely softening around things. And we sometimes see things very starkly as they are in perimenopause. And whether or not you get HRT, you are a different person and you are a different character. And quite a lot of people find that they are not wasting time anymore, and they're not letting people patronizing them anymore, and they're not being shoved to the back of the queue anymore. And there is this moment of realization that you know, we have power and that our brains are running steadily after menopause. We're not going up and down every month. We're just motoring along. And when you think about in history, you know, all the stories of hags and crones and witches and people who left their village, you know, and ruled from the forest and, you know, changed people's lives, and wise women. And that narrative does fit the brain change that we can now see on an MRI scan. So that's really exciting to explain why we are the way we are after menopause and the sort of women we go on to be. But one of the essential things, I think, is you need to be in good health. And as much as possible, obviously, you've got to look after exercise and nutrition. But if you can, look after your hormones, because your hormones are key to good health. And so it's both sort of feminist, but sort of scientific at the same time, trying to look at it from both points of view.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And another thing which I find interesting that you talk about is the idea of upgrading your relationships and friendships. And I suppose that goes alongside with what you were saying about kind of reclaiming your power and knowing your worth and all that kind of thing.
Mm. Well, I was talking to a great psychotherapist called Dr. Kalyanit Ben-Ari, who's a couples therapist as well. And we were talking about the couple pause, which comes around menopause. And that's not necessarily just a sexual thing, but we are changing. And if you think many, many people have been married or with their partner for 25 years, raised children, they're looking into the future, they're 50, it's another 25 years. Is the same old relationship going to fit? If it's not, then maybe you need to separate or get divorced. Or do you need to go back into that relationship and make it even richer and better? But you kind of need to not just sit there letting it rust around you. And it's the same with friendships, I think. We almost need to take positive action to build things and do things with people. Well, in fact, talking of Kalyanit, who then became my friend after I recruited her for the book, and she forced me to go to 6 pottery classes every kind of Tuesday evening. And I was absolutely terrible at pottery. I was without doubt the worst in the class, just big blobs that fell over, and they all were making little Japanese pots, you know. But, you know, that strange friendship we had together talking about women's brains and women's lives while making our pots. And there is that kind of intentional friendship that you can maybe take up that wouldn't have necessarily have popped up in previous parts of your life. And I do think that is an important part. And also looking at the friends who are drains. And you can only look after so many drains in your life. And you probably should look after one or two and be supportive, but you can't do it all the time. And if you think, right, am I going to live 10 years? Am I going to live 20 years? Do I want to go on holiday with these people? No. You know, there's things like that. You suddenly see yourself in focus. And, you know, you want to give as much as you can to the people who need it, but you also need to have self-compassion.
Yeah.
And look to yourself more. And as mums, as carers, as people who are looking after their mums, you know, as the people who were running, you know, the PTA or whatever it was, you know, we've done so much caring for other people. And I think my book it's saying to you, care for yourself, make yourself fantastic. And then, yes, you may go on to the next revolution and find a new way of caring for people or caring for the world. And I do have a friend in the book who's in the Creative Awakening chapter who I meet in the John Lewis uniform department when we have tiny kids. And then she becomes a psychotherapist. And then she gives that up and becomes a member of Extinction Rebellion. I'm like, whoa, you know, she's done what she wanted to do and she's followed, you know, that, fair enough, you know. And it's really interesting that, you know, you can suddenly say, well, what's the thing I haven't done? Maybe I'm going to do that now.
Mm.
And I love that. It feels very joyful.
Yeah. Well, it makes perfect sense, doesn't it? The fact that we are changing and our brains are changing, as you said, it makes sense that we might want different things out of life, whether it's our friendship, whether it's our relationship, whether it's our job, all these things. It seems like the right time to start asking yourself those questions. Am I happy in this job, relationship, friendship, and doing something about it? If not.
Yeah. One of the great characters in the book is called Erin. And she was a sort of executive in California in the media industry. And she had a terrible time with her marriage. And she made herself a PowerPoint, pages and pages of exactly what was going wrong with her life. And she called it OMG, so much bullshit. And she looked at her own PowerPoint, took her own advice, and actually she got divorced and changed her job. And is so much happier now. I'm not suggesting we all need to make a PowerPoint, but really thinking forensically about your own life is an amazing thing and sort of interesting and enjoyable and empowering, you know.
Yeah. definitely. Empowering is a big thing, isn't it? Particularly as a woman, I think, if you've been that carer for kids and parents and things like that, making those choices for yourself, positive choices, positive changes, and going, oh, I'm so pleased I've done this. Yay me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you about the muffin top. You talk about avoiding the midlife muffin top. I think all women are going, yes, yes, how do we do that then?
Well, I'm absolutely against fat shaming, but this is fat explaining. And it's kind of important, I realise, to explain it to women and not have people sitting there going, oh my God, I've got a muffin top above my jeans, or I've suddenly my stomach's grown. It turns out that in menopause, when our good hormone, which is called estradiol, it's a form of estrogen, it's like the superpowered estrogen you get back in HRT. When that goes, you try to make more estrogen and you make a really sort of low-grade, not-so-good estrogen called estrone. And guess where you make it? In your fat, and in the fat, the visceral fat around your middle. So that little tire around your middle is trying to sort your life out, but it's not able to give you the best estrogen, and it's a riskier form of estrogen for later health. So if you're on HRT, in many ways, your body will not be wanting to make that ring round your tummy, because it won't be desperate for estrogen. But the other thing very clearly that came through in the book when I interviewed all these health experts was muscle. And really, we need to go the full Schwarzenegger. We need not just to lift little pink weights, but lift really big weights, and building up muscle burns fat. And that was really clear. And also just makes you feel powerful, makes you feel strong, makes you feel balanced. So it's a combination of those two things, as well as eating more protein. What we ate when we were 40 is not what we should be eating when we're 55. And I mean, I'm not a nutritionist and expert, but I do go into that a bit in the chapter. And, you know, it is love your rainbow and your Mediterranean diet and your fish oil. And it really is quite simple. But it's hard to do. It's hard to have the time. It's hard to have the space. And one of the great things in the book was a bunch of women who had a nutritionist who got them all on a WhatsApp group together. And everybody kind of lost their muffin top together on the WhatsApp group in a kind of really brilliant way. You know, they'd pick peaches from a tree or whatever. You know, they would show the good recipes they'd cooked. But the fact there was a bunch of women sort of holding your hand and laughing about it when it went wrong, really the community made a big difference. And I hadn't thought about that. And that was kind of rather moving, actually.
Yeah. Oh, communities of women can change the world, can't they?
Yeah.
Definitely. And I love the title of the book. I have to comment on that. You know, the whole idea of a crisis is generally seen as a negative thing, and particularly a midlife crisis. But I love how you've put a positive spin on it, how to have a magnificent midlife crisis. Very clever.
Yeah. I think you've got to have one. I think almost we need to have, you know, go down the U-bend a bit to come up the other side and change. And there are people who lead perfect lives and are completely happy, but, you know, I don't know many people like that. And actually that little bit of shock, a little bit of, you know, disconnection, and you think, well, how do I reconnect? What do I do? What do I want? And it is, you know, it is a really exciting, creative time, I think. And I'm just really sort of astonished by the reaction to the book and the numbers of people who've just said, oh my God, I had no idea about so many of these things. And tomorrow I am going to go and do X or Y, or, you know, and I just think if there's one chapter that gets into somebody's hands and it really, really helps them do something about some part of their life, then, you know, I've done the job.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Well, if people want to get a copy of How to Have a Magnificent Midlife Crisis, it's available now on our website, tre.radio, and it's by Kate Muir, who we've been chatting with today. Kate, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Hannah. Bye.